I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So without further ado, we are welcoming Jameson Barrett, who is with us today. And Jameson is the music teacher at Tokyo International School. He is from the States on the East Coast. He went to Westminster College.
Yes.
And yeah, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So what we're going to do today is talk about a project that we have in mind that will hopefully be completed this upcoming school year. But first, Jameson, can you just talk about yourself? I'm curious about you and as a student, specifically, I'm curious about like collaborations that you've done that have been inspiring for you. So yeah, can you think of any like inspiring collaborations?
I have quite a lot of those experiences actually. I think going back as far as middle school, when I was in orchestra in middle school, we did this festival where we would collaborate with a bunch of other students from other schools, and we all joined together in an orchestra. I'm sure you're familiar with like the PMEA, TMEA, those different organizations. Back in middle school, we had a similar sort of thing where it wasn't high school level, but we did some sort of collaborative orchestra with a whole bunch of other schools. But then going into high school, there was I'm from Pennsylvania. So we had PMEA, the district, regional, all-state choirs and orchestras. At that time, I did PMEA, district, regional, and all-state choir. And I remember collaborating with a whole bunch of students from other schools and making music together and having a really great experience bonding and making music and learning from each other in a really small, like 3-day time period.
Yeah.
And then going into college, when I went to Westminster, the school is really well known for its choir program. And so we did a lot of collaboration with orchestras from around the world. We performed with the Berlin Philharmonic, New York Philharmonic, and Philadelphia Orchestra. And so those were some of the most memorable experiences for me to have a really kind of professional understanding of how collaboration works.
Yeah.
So that to me was the most impactful. And I think the most memorable of everything was when I was a sophomore at Westminster, we were invited to perform with the New York Philharmonic in Andrea Bocelli's Central Park concert.
Wow.
Which had a whole bunch of superstar performers in it. So we had Celine Dion, Chris Botti, the trumpet player.
Mm-hmm.
We had some violinists, we had opera singers, and we got to collaborate with all of those people. Now, not on a one-to-one level, right, but as a choir. And it was really eye-opening to me, the power that collaboration has in a musician's life.
Yeah, that's amazing. And this is,
and so now I'm a little bit different. It's my life has taken a major turn from choir, and I'm back into orchestra.
I was gonna ask
a little bit
you
more background. Yeah, I grew up playing the violin for most of my life.
Okay, so you've done both. You're a singer, mm-hmm, and a violinist.
Yes, but I think first and foremost, I would call myself a violinist.
Okay.
But I went through a phase in high school where I felt maybe I couldn't break it into the world of violin professionally. And so I kind of went the choir direction instead, but it was always at the back of my mind. And I somehow came full circle and landed a job doing orchestra here, which I'm very happy about. And
of course,
but for the longest time, my mind was set on orchestra only, but things changed, and then I ended up in the right spot, I think.
Yeah, it all works out. I'm just thinking that the violin and the voice are so similar. Like, have you heard about like the violin is the closest instrument to the human voice. Mm-hmm. So it seems like you have a unique perspective on that, it being like a legitimate singer who sings with Andre Bocelli in university, and also a string player. Do you like combine those or keep them separate, would you say?
I do combine them to a certain degree. I implement a bit of singing into my practice in my classes. So for example, actually it was particularly helpful during COVID this year when we couldn't really play because my program has a lot of shared instruments. Mm-hmm. Having kids be able to perform the music that they write. Mm-hmm. So I've, for example, had students compose their own theme song in sixth grade, and they had to be able to at least clap the rhythm.
Okay.
It should be something that you can approach as a musician and you should be able to perform, not something that's like wildly rhythmically ridiculous and something that you can't perform. Yeah. So in a normal year, mm-hmm. they would be required to play their composition for the class, but this mm-hmm. year things changed. So I do ask that students be able to perform what they do, at least clapping, because I know, and many people know, in the middle school years, it's a very difficult time for the voice, and a lot of kids don't feel comfortable with their voice cracking, and there's a whole lot of other things that go along with that, mm-hmm. but I do ask them to perform their work vocally to a certain degree. But on top of that, I do also run the school musical. So I am doing vocal music a little bit as well. We do sing in my class. Yes.
You do it all. It seems like
you do it all.
Yes. Do everything. Wow. So you've obviously had like, you have an incredible story of like, you know, going, having these great opportunities to play with, you said, orchestras, professional level players at a young age. So then now you're here.
Now I'm here.
At TIS, Tokyo International School. And I guess next, what we can do is just like talk about your program. Like what mm-hmm. you just said you do musicals, you do, it seems like you have a string program that's going to be part of this project that we'll talk about later. But could you just like give a brief overview for anyone who might be interested in like your program? So,
yep.
Yeah.
So, I'll start by saying, coming from the US where things are quite static in terms of school enrollment, mm-hmm. You can have one group of students from, I don't know, kindergarten all the way to high school. It's not like that here. It's very transient. We have our clientele or our student body is very, very transient. So they're families are working for embassies, they're working for major companies. And so they've kind of been brought here for X number of years, like a 3 to 5 year contract, sometimes even shorter. And so their families are here and then they go to the next post, the next place. So I don't have as much opportunity to build groups over many, many, many years. Right. I kind of take what I can get at that time and build something, which was something that I'm still kind of wrapping my head around. And this mm-hmm. is now I've been in the same job for 7 years. I finally have a comfortable handle on it and mm-hmm. how to approach it, but that really does impact how I teach and how I approach my program. So my program, I'm teaching the middle school. I'm teaching violin lessons for grade 5. So I teach grade 5 to 8 primarily. In the past, I have taught primary school as well from preschool to grade 5. But then now I've moved officially to just middle school. So our program starts in the grade six to eight middle school program. Everybody will have come in for the most part with 1 year of violin lessons from me so that they can make an informed choice on what instrument they want to choose for their next 3 years. So Students will come in, they'll either choose to continue playing the violin, they'll choose viola, cello, or bass. We spend about a week or two kind of workshopping those instruments and seeing which ones they feel most comfortable with. And from there, we start to kind of build our skills in playing. So that's the first few weeks of school. And throughout the 3 years that they're in the program, they stay with the same instrument and they'll continue to build those skills through grade eight before they go to high school. And our school goes to grade eight only, and then students have to apply to a new high school. So it's kind of a mixed bag of the experiences they'll get when they go to high school. And I can't always guarantee that they'll keep playing, but I've had a fair few number of students who come back and say, I've kept playing, I've kept going. And it's quite interesting for me to hear what they were able to take from my program into high school. But now my now TIS is opening up grade nine next year, in 2 years, and grade 10 the following year. So I will have a larger opportunity to build the program for a few more years with students. And so throughout the program, the students are doing not just instrumental, but they're also doing some elements of music history, music theory, composition. So for example, students will have units where I just mentioned before, they have to write a theme song for themselves. Mm-hmm. That's composition. Mm-hmm. And they have a set number of requirements, the types of rhythms, pitches, articulations that they can use. And then in a non-COVID year, they would be asked to play. So they should be able to emulate what they wrote on the page on their instrument. So they can only do as much as their ability level lets them at that time. Other units include writing music for short films. That's like a grade eight unit. And I ask them to change the mood of the story by writing different types of music to show them that music really does impact how you perceive things. So that's one other example. We also have a musical, which is not curricular, but students will do that as an after-school club. That's another opportunity. Still semi-related to the program, but a different type of performance opportunity. And we have presentations on music history, how music from different cultures can be connected. It's a really wide range of experiences.
Yeah.
But we're following the core arts standards from the US. So everything still does align with what's happening over there in the West. And they're still able to build those skills that are expected of them as a musician, as a young, learning, growing musician.
Right, right. So you said you're starting at middle school level, like when
middle
they're,
school, which is which is different from what I grew up doing.
Yeah, so it seems like, okay, you start with them, they're in middle school, and at that age, you're still, you know, you're mature enough to do all the projects that you talked about, like writing a film score and creating compositions. So in a sense, that's a good age to do more advanced projects. But most of them, would you say most of your students, maybe this is their first music class, or maybe they've never played an instrument before.
That's largely the case. It's not their first. It's not their first music class. They've been, many students have had music in the other schools they've been in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
But I have a very limited number of students who have come in with prior instrumental experience.
Okay.
So I'll have kids come in generally, and this is why I started to teach violin for primary grade five level. That they can just kind of get a head start. I started violin when I was in third grade, I believe. So yeah, it was much earlier.
Start through your public school system?
It was through my public school and later into private lessons as well.
Yeah.
And so, I started much earlier. And at one point I did trial teaching violin for grade four as well. So I did teach grade four, five, six, seven, eight, but then my schedule changed quite drastically. And so I wasn't able to do the grade four anymore. So I do find it's quite difficult to teach middle school students beginner instruments. While their brains and their bodies are still quite pliable, they are going through adolescence, and so their body is growing in every direction, and they don't know how to control things. Sometimes the kids like can't even walk in a straight line anymore. Like they're just they're growing everywhere, and their sense of balance and direction is completely thrown off. So throw in an instrument to the mix, they're like, what is going on?
I
really try to be sympathetic, empathetic to their situation, and I understand that things are different and more difficult. But that said, I can say I've had success with the program. I have kids who have gone on to play continuously through high school. A bunch of kids just played at their high school music festival last year, and they were all my students previously. So it is something that is making the impact I want it to. And students, the most important thing for me is that the students come away from my program with a sense of appreciation for how music is made and how music is played. I don't need them to become the next Yo-Yo Ma, the next Itzhak Perlman. I just want them to understand that anybody can do this as long as you're willing to apply yourself and there's some sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Some sort of interest and passion behind it. If you're interested in what you're doing, you're going to succeed in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Is my philosophy.
That is a great philosophy to have. It's the worst when teachers like are really strict and expect you to play perfectly in tune and have this like sort of like a power trip. Like that's the worst. Yeah. But yeah, with you, that's definitely what I think is about. With me, I'm like I love the saying that you're teaching music just to have kids be good human beings. Like you can really learn a lot emotionally from just playing an instrument, and there's so much to be learned from it, which maybe we could transition to playing with others. Because like, how about, you know, it seems like your program is really set up well for like this Ode to Joy project that we have in mind. So
it's something everybody has to play. So
I know, it's like
and with my program, sometimes that's one thing that the student is playing for the whole year because that's the level they're at. Sometimes I'll have a kid who cannot get past Ode to Joy, and it's going to take them a whole year to achieve that. But I have a large number of kids who complete Ode to Joy within the first few weeks. And another very interesting aspect of the program is because it's so transient, I'll have kids come in who are previously trained for like 7 years, and they could outplay me. They could do, I had a girl come in and she was completed Suzuki, the entire book series at age 12. And she was playing violin showpieces by Fritz Kreisler. Like she was doing really advanced work, but I had her in there, and then I had a kid who couldn't get past Ode to Joy for a whole year.
Wow.
And they're in the same class.
Oh wow.
And that's the beauty and the nightmare of my program. It's it's a very heterogeneous program, and everything is very different. I have many different ability levels in one room. So those kids who are super advanced, they kind of can work as my quote unquote assistants, and they can help the students who are a bit more behind. And I think you don't really realize how much you know and what you don't know until you try to teach someone else. And so those kids really learn. Those kids really learn a lot about themselves as players and musicians when they try to actually impart their knowledge on other students.
And
they realize what they really know and what they don't know. So I think that's also a very valuable learning experience.
I remember myself even like watching kids better than me. That was so inspiring. Like when one kid would play for the class and they were, you know, like playing something that I could not do, it gives you a sense of like drive and want to continue and want to do that. So seems like you've got a mixed bunch, but it's you got it all not all figured out, but you know, you're doing it
for the most part.
Yeah, definitely. So how about we, like, so we're talking about Ode to Joy now, but we should give some context as to why we're talking about this piece. And it's because we're trying to have a project where your school plays this melody and we find another school to play the harmony. That's sort of the simplified version of it. So, basically your program will have a group of string players and you're going to record the melody part, and then that will be sent to another school who will listen to your melody and then record the harmony. Now, I know the Essential Elements book doesn't have a harmony part, but what we will be doing is sort of like a small composition of the harmony, depending on the other school, depending on what they want to do. So that is the project that we have in mind. And I have a great next question for you. We can like move forward with this, which is this Ode to Joy project. What do you hope the students will learn from it? What are you hoping that they will get out of it?
I think that this is being one of the most well-known songs in the classical canon. I think that Ode to Joy is something that everybody has heard. And all students, when I introduce the song, I'll say, hey, we're going to start this song today. And they're like, what's that? And as soon as I play it, they're, oh, I know that song. They've heard it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think for them, I think for my particular group of students, I don't know which specific class it'll be at this point, but I think for them, one of the most important or biggest takeaways I want them to have is the sense that you can collaborate anywhere, with anyone, and you can make music of high quality. I don't know what it's going to sound like for the middle school group, but you can make music that sounds beautiful, and they don't have to be in the same room. They can be somewhere else completely different. And I don't love the phrase that music is a universal language, but I do think that music is a way that people can connect. Going back to when I was in college, I had to write a philosophy of music education. And a large part of my philosophy was that everybody is listening to music all the time. Everybody has access to music. Everybody has music coming through their phones, on the go with them, in their AirPods, headphones, what have you. Everybody, I don't know a single person in the world who doesn't listen to music in some way, shape, or form. And so to have music be something common across countries, across cultures, and we're a primarily international school in Japan, so we're not purely Japanese, but to know that we can play something and have it translate directly across to a completely different country and have students understand what we're playing and doing, right, is a very powerful situation.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I completely agree. The way I see it with music is, yeah, like you said, it can be understood anywhere in the world, because you know, really what it is like vibrations, whatever the scientific term is, it's vibrations in the air that make pitches that are everywhere. I think with the way I have been thinking about this, like, global view of music has been a way to express internal emotions. So sort of like, okay, you're playing this Ode to Joy melody and internally you're feeling something, right? It might be, I'm proud that I'm doing this. It might be a happy feeling, but whatever it is, it's like going into the sound that you're making. Mm-hmm. So that sound is actually like literally your internal emotion. And then that sound can then be interpreted by someone else, and then they'll have their own, you know, internal thoughts about it. So that's where the magic lies, I think, you know, the fact that like, it's this way, it's almost like a carrier for what you're feeling. And then it can be interpreted by someone else. And I think that can be on every level. You know, like we talked before, you don't expect students to be the next Yo-Yo Ma or the next whatever great soloist. You just want them to, learn life values, learn life skills, and you want them to improve. So I think this way of like putting your full self into it, you can do that at a beginner level. That's what I think can happen. That's what this is about. I think really like, you know, using this simple melody and mix and match. And that sounds amazing. I think it'll be really memorable for the kids.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really great experience.
And yeah, how about James, in the last thing, maybe we can wrap up because our Zoom is still in session. It said it would be 45 minutes, but we're still surviving. So that's, we're still alive here virtually. But shall we talk about joy? Because I think that's a good theme for this. The piece is Ode to Joy. We talked, it's the one of the most famous melodies in the world, but this word joy that is associated with music, I know for me, music has given me so much joy in my life. I can think about, any time I got to play with someone else, I remember having these thoughts that I'm like so thankful to just do it, to have that opportunity. And that was like throughout my whole upbringing as a student, anytime I could have a performance with other people, that really provided joy. And then I think for me also, like I said, the internal emotional expression, that's what gave me a lot of joy, almost like therapeutic. You know, like I could put these emotions into my sound, and I could do that every day. And after, it was really like peaceful, calming thing that I could do, that I could rely on. So I'd say those are the two ways that music brought me joy. Like the fact that I could play with other people, and the fact that I could express myself through music. But I'm curious with you, what or how, how has it brought you joy?
I think how music brings me joy, or how it has brought me joy, has changed a lot over time. From when I started my life as a musician, when I started playing the violin, what brought me joy was playing all the time, which is why I could get so carried away practicing for hours and hours, and time just flew by and nothing else mattered because I was just there enjoying it. That brought me so much joy, and it was all I thought about from the moment I woke up until the moment I fell asleep. Like, it was just constantly that. But then when I got into high school and it became more competitive, things changed. And so I think the way that it brought me joy was the collaborative aspect of music and playing with others, making that unified sound as an orchestra, that group, that powerful large group sound in a large hall. That was magic to me. Yeah. And now that's changed to when I go see live performances and I hear the really tight harmonies between the first violin, the second violin in the string quartets, or the cello playing in octaves with the violin. That really incredible sound that you just cannot emulate anywhere else, that brings me joy. But now as a teacher, what brings me the most joy is seeing the students learn these things that I learned when I was growing up and the things that I experienced, and seeing them experience what I fell in love with so long ago, and showing them what music is able to help you do, what it's able to help you achieve, and how it makes you feel. That now is what I would say brings me the most joy. And I've found my music tastes have changed drastically over the past few years. Once music becomes your job, I think it really changes you, because what I used to do for fun and as a hobby is now work. And I think as a teacher, not just a music teacher, but as a teacher working now, I'm working in an IB school. So there's a lot of other things that go with the teaching. Of course, we all have standards and benchmarks, but we also have statements of inquiry questions, global context, and things that we have to, things that we have to look at music through different lenses with, and ways to approach it. And so it's making me kind of relearn things that I forgot I knew, and look at music in different ways. I find that to also bring me joy. But it also, because music is work, it has really changed the way that I enjoy music myself. So I find now I'm seeking out more opportunities to see jazz, independent musicians and things like that, which aren't classical per se, but discovering new music is something that also really brings me joy. Music that I don't know and I don't understand. So I've spent a lot of time in the past few years discovering music from where I'm living now in Japan, and how different that is from what I grew up learning. For me, it's the collaborative aspect of music that still brings me so much joy. In the past few years, my group has collaborated with some local musicians. So we did like an orchestra with koto accompaniment. So koto is the Japanese instrument, it's 12 strings, yeah. And it's played by plucking, and it has this incredible sound and incredible timbre that you just can't match anywhere else. And we did a collaboration with koto players and strings. And that was a really magical experience too, to have the kids. To have the kids like experience that as well. And for me to experience it as their teacher, to kind of go back into that professional music making realm that I used to live in, that I've been away from for a few years now, to get a taste of that, but also to realize that that's not where I really want to be, to realize that my biggest passion is teaching and imparting what I love to my students.
It gives you purpose. Like that's the word I'm thinking, like purpose. It gives you a reason to live, as cliche as that sounds. But Jameson, that is a great way to end this, I think. Very inspirational for what you have done, what you will continue to do. And I'm sure Sora there is proud of you.